back to Tango TV's premiere interview program. Today in the studio we have Do, famous in the multiplayer community and playtesting, and Devastation, who recently came in second at the 20th anniversary QuakeCon tournament, where he lost to Jakist. And beyond that, has been a active force in the deathmatch community since the 90s, and probably one of the best players of Doom to ever exist. That's where you say hi.
Howdy. Here I am. Welcome to be on the show. Glad to be on the show.
So we'll get right into QuakeCon and discuss what happened there. It was a good match. It was a really close match. How do you feel coming off that loss?
Not too bad, actually. I felt we put a really good show on. I was a little angry in the first game. How that one ended in the draw, as we can talk a little bit about it later. But overall, I was glad that we were able to put on a good show for the spectators, and I think both of us played some really good games there. So, you know, I'm not too sore about that loss. I think we both played really well, and it could have went either way.
Actually, you know, when Jakist tied up that Vango 5 map 1 match, that may have cost you a victory. Do you realize that? Like, you may have had an advantage.
Oh,
because
for sure.
It would go to the final map, the fifth map, right?
It would have went to the next map, which would have been King 1, which was in my favor, as I won it in the upper bracket against him. So yes, that tie there, I think, definitely gave him the match for sure. Where I think if I had won that first game and tied up the match 1-1, I think the rest of the maps probably were slightly in my favor.
So basically, that split second decision there to spawn too soon rub you of an overall victory, maybe?
No, I did not choose to spawn, actually. The tournament rules, the way they were set up, is that it was a forced respawn after 3 seconds. I sat there with my hands off the keys. Actually, no, I had tab held down looking at the timer, and I spawned and realized he was right there and then tried to move out of the way. So actually, it was a forced spawn.
So did you shout with disappointment?
Actually, I'm surprised that there's been no cell phone videos that have gone up on the internet of this. But at that, basically, my hands were in the air, my mouth was wide open. I couldn't believe that he had done what he just did. It was disbelief. I just stared for about the whole intermission screen with my hands in the air, mouth wide open, not believing that he had just done that.
I can tell you that both the audience and stream chat exploded at that moment, and especially in the chat, there was just a stream of "What the fuck just happened? This game kicks so much ass."
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was probably really good for the game that it happened. Really bad for me that it happened.
So go ahead.
What do you think about, obviously that was the match everyone was waiting for, but what do you think about the rest of the games and players there?
It was good. It was probably a little bit of a disappointing turnout because I think only 33 players ended up entering. But there was actually a lot of interest in the tournament, and then a lot of people just didn't show up. For example, when I had landed, I checked into the hotel, dropped my stuff off, and I went immediately to the QuakeCon site to see who was there. And there, I ran into a bunch of people that were like, "Oh, hey, you here for QuakeCon? Yeah." And a lot of them were like, "Yeah, that Doom 2 tournament should be interesting. I'm probably going to sign up for that." And I must have met about 10 to 20 people who said this. And I was like, wow, okay, you know, there's a lot of interest here. You know, we better show up early. And then everyone I had talked to, they never ended up coming and signing up. So I don't actually know what ever ended up happening to them.
Was there the price, money price, was it known beforehand, or was
the money was known beforehand? And I think a lot of people wouldn't have known that some really good players were coming, so I was kind of surprised that they still didn't end up showing up. Like, a lot of people were expecting, okay, a casual Doom tournament. Yeah, why not? I'd probably stand a better chance on that than some of the other open tournaments. So I was kind of surprised at that.
So,
Domus, yeah. Dominus showed up, so it was good to see him playing. I think it was the shooter had somebody similar to that name had shown up, and he was a good player. We didn't know he was coming. So, you know, there were some good players there, and there were some interesting games. Obviously, Demon Sphere and Rude were extremely strong competitors that everyone always had to watch out for as well.
So definitely, how do you feel about it, like, getting attention drawn to the Doom deathmatch scene? Like, do you think that it helped bring, you know, more light to, oh, hey, this is still alive, and people with, you know, a good amount of skill still play this?
I was hoping it would bring a lot more attention to the game. Whether it has or not is probably yet to be seen. Like, we definitely generated a bit of interest because I play Quake Live as well. And it was funny, for the next 2 to 3 weeks, I would log into to Quake Live games, you know, play a bunch of duels and some free-for-all games. And everyone's like, are you the Doom guy from QuakeCon? It's like, yep. And it's like, wow, that was pretty good match. You know, that was awesome. So there's other gaming communities out there that kind of saw, okay, yeah, Doom is actually still played. Whether it's actually bumped them enough to say, geez, maybe I should give that a try, I'm not so sure. It might have brought some old people back who used to play and be like, oh, okay, it's still alive. Yeah, I'm going to check that out again. But I don't think we've seen any huge boom in numbers or anything like that.
Yeah, and your final opponent, Jakeist, you do realize that's probably the closest you ever got to beating him, because checking your ZDDL history, for example, he's quite like your nemesis.
For sure. There was one, I think it was ZDDL number 2 or number 3, where the games were actually extremely close, and I ended up beating him 50-49 in a Judas game. That match was actually extremely close. So that was another point in time where I was very close to him. And it's kind of funny, actually, that specific ZDDL match played a role in the maps I picked in the upper bracket finals on the first first break.
This is basically a rivalry that goes for decades.
I wouldn't say decades, but definitely a number of years. Me and Jakeist have had many different matches against each other. So, and some of them I'm either a bit rusty or not playing as well. And there was, as I say, the ZDDL one where both of us were in extremely good shape, and that was a very close game. And then obviously at QuakeCon, he was probably not in his top form, and I was probably pretty close to my top form, like after all the practice. So, you know, it yielded a very interesting game. And had we waited an extra day to play our upper bracket game, or if I made a different decision, it definitely could have went a different way.
So now going back in time to how you first got into Doom, you've been active for quite a long time. Do was recently mentioning how Anders Johnson and that crew used to make fun of you quite a bit. And how did you originally get into Doom? Was it like everybody else playing it when it came out in the 90s?
Well, I was born in 1986, so you can quickly do the math. I'm 27, so I would have been about 6 or 7 years old when Doom originally came out. So I haven't been playing it since then. What it was is I used to hang around with one of my cousins who was decently older than me. So I was probably 8 or 9. She was 21, 22. And one of her boyfriends at the time had played had Doom on the computer. So when I visited her place, he had shown me Doom. And I had enjoyed it. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And it's funny enough, another game that he had played, because I was a big Star Wars fan, was X-Wing vs. TIE Fighter. And it just so ended up that those were the two games I ended up competing in, because I played them at a young age and enjoyed them. So when I got my first computer, I was 14 in the year 2000. So for my birthday, my parents had bought me a Pentium 120. And the first thing I did was to try to go out and look for Doom. I guess you can back up a little bit. At that same point in time, I think I was in grade 8, my teacher at the time had a computer in the classroom that had Doom loaded up on it. So about the same time I got my own computer, I tried so many ways of like loading Doom on these floppies and bringing it home to install on my computer, and it just never worked. Eventually, I had picked up Doom 95 and X-Wing vs. TIE Fighter and played. And just by random chance, because I was playing X-Wing vs. TIE Fighter on Zone.com, and just by random chance, I was just clicking around. I was like, oh, what's this IPX room thing? Went in there. I ran into NCDS, who is from Finland and a good friend of Ocelot. And he had mentioned, oh, yeah, we play Doom. I was like, oh, really? Like, I'd love to play Doom against other people besides my friends. So, you know, he gave me Doom 2, and we played a game. And I think I lost 50-2 in map 1 or something similar to that. And he had showed me IRC. And, you know, we had played a few games in a few weeks. So this is around 2001 at this point, around May. And then in June, I had ran into Dominus on the Zone. And we had played a game, and he beat me 52-2 in map one. And it was crazy. And I was just like, wow. I was like, I want to be like this guy. Like, this guy is good. And I actually asked him, you know, can you help me out? You know, can you teach me how to play a bit? Sure, no problem. So we started from there. You know, he got me off this keyboard-only playing like everyone used to always play and using a mouse and keys. And we had played a ton of games that summer, and I just slowly kind of built up my skill level. The following year, so 2002, I had found some other people to play with from IRC member Nightmare. And we had continued to play a ton. And then there was a guy named Ogre Slayer, who I kind of helped out a little bit because he was new into the game. And we had played probably 50 to 100 games that summer. And then by that fall, I was kind of playing at a level where I was getting close to Dominus and Ocelot and Slasher and Scores. And then I just played on Z-Damon and stuff and just kept improving and playing and just went from there, really. Attended a number of LANs over the years. In 2003, I went to Washington, D.C. to meet up with Dominus and Ocelot. In 2006, I went to Toronto to play with Switcher and a crew of some good players like Hatred, Arrogance, and Shadow Ghost.
Is this the famous LAN where you arrived in your famous white suit?
Yes, that would be the one that I purchased the white suit just to arrive into Toronto with. In 2007, I actually hosted my own LAN here in Nova Scotia with a bunch of the RB crew coming up. And then it was kind of dry for a few years, and then QuakeCon announced their tournament and decided I had to go. So off I got in a plane and went to QuakeCon. That's kind of how I got started in the game. So I guess to sum it up, I had seen the game at a very young age. When I made an impression on me, when I got a computer, I played it. Just kind of randomly ran into some people online that played it and got involved in the community that way.
So was Doom always a multiplayer thing for you? Or did you even start with like playing single player?
Well, I mean, you know, I played the single player missions and, you know, used keys only to beat, you know, Ultraviolence, Nightmare, all that stuff. And me and my friends, like, I've always been a competitive person. I've always competed in many different things. So, you know, I'd always like to play my friends in Deathmatch. And we used to play N64 GoldenEye and Perfect Dark and all that. So knowing that you could play Deathmatch online was the obvious choice of where I wanted to go, just to play with other people.
I've seen you actually recording some speedrunning demos. Not many of them, but for, like, Requiem and Scythe. Was that something you briefly just dabbled in?
I don't even remember setting any records for Requiem or Scythe. I definitely set some records on TNT and Plutonia. And I even had a Doom 2 record. I think it was Map 17 I took from Johnson for a little while. No, I definitely got into the compet end for a little bit. And as kind of a funny way, it was kind of a means to an end to improve my deathmatching skill in a way. Because in the earlier days, I was probably really well known as an extremely accurate SSG player. But my movement was amongst the worst movement of top players. Like, my movement was horrendous. Like, you know, I could get around a map, but it was nothing compared to, like, the nice smooth movement of Ocelot and Slasher. So Ocelot and Slasher, they were into doing the no monster runs and the competent single player runs. So they said, you know, you do this and you just kind of, you get more comfortable with the mouse, I guess, and it'll improve your movement. So I said, okay, sure. So I did some records that way, and I don't know, it's kind of a bit frustrating in a way. It's just like, oh, no, did something mess up, start again. Oh, no, did something mess up, start again. So, you know, you're just kind of grinding out the speedruns. It never really appealed to me a whole lot. Like, I enjoy doing them, but it was more of a way to help improve my movement. And it's kind of funny, I've probably switched a little bit now where my movement's actually extremely decent, and my aim has probably hurt a little bit with age.
So, on this timeline, where do we fit in the Map 01 Bible?
Map 01 Bible. Wow.
Can you explain what it is and why have you decided to do that bit?
Well, I've actually got two. I've got a Map 01 guide and I've got a death matching Bible. So obviously, like I said earlier, Dominus had taught me how to play. So I was kind of fortunate that someone had shown me how to play. I've probably always had ability in different things, but I always like to be shown or helped by other people. It just kind of, you know, clicks on the brain. And that's one of the things I always like to repay back to the community or to others is to share my knowledge or to help others out. So that was kind of the motivation for writing this guide, where I'd log in. I'd always get some emails like, you know, hey, you're a good player, can you help me out? So I'd go and I'd watch the player play and I'd make some comments. And I found out that a lot of the comments I'm making is the same. Okay, the person's either not strafe running properly. You know, I've done a few iterations of trying to teach people how to strafe run. Just different logical things in a map, or how do you play a map? So I got a lot of the same questions, and I decided to write the different guides just to kind of help people out. So there's a resource there that if someone wants to come in and play this game and say, okay, well, what do I do? Where do I start? How do I start? They could kind of stumble across my guide and be like, okay. And there's a long text that if you read it and you really want to get into it, there's a lot of information there that'll help somebody out. The other motivation is obviously not only from people asking me questions, but from logging into servers and spectating people and seeing a lot of the same mistakes over and over and over. And there's so many players that have a high level of talent, but there's just this roadblock that they're not thinking about, and they can't seem to get over that specific roadblock, and it hinders their game. I just decided to write the guides that way to help people out. Time frame wise, it was probably in 2002, 2003. So once I've hit my peak at the time, so near late 2002, early 2003, I was a pretty good player. So I had decided at that point that that's probably when I can actually talk authoritatively about some of these things. One of the reasons too is I've taken a very analytical approach back then to Doom. So not only would I study my own games, I would study the games of pro players, so Ocelot, Slasher, Dominus, and kind of note the differences. Okay, well, these are similar situations. Why am I doing this and why are they doing that? And just kind of analyze it out and try to think for yourself, okay, well, why is this better? And in some cases, I say, well, I don't think what they're doing is better, so I modified it and went my way. In other cases, I'm like, okay, what I'm doing is not really good, and I'd switch it. So I kind of learned how they played to that level, and then slowly improved and made my own game plays that way. Another thing that probably benefited is I kind of studied the game through history. So I started and watched a lot of games in 1996. How did they play in 1996? Why did they play that way? Then look at 1998. Then look at 2000 when Ocelot and Johnson were playing, and work your way up. That's the kind of the approach I took to it. And there's an interesting evolution in Doom gameplay over those years. And I've toyed around with the idea of actually making a YouTube series of kind of picking out a lot of interesting demos from the different eras and kind of describing what's going on and what evolved into what. So that's kind of where the guide came in.
See, that'd be really interesting. One of the writing questions we have is actually about how you feel Deathmatch has grown or changed over the years. So that kind of, you know, directly relates to what you were just talking about.
Yeah, okay. So obviously the game, one of the very first deathmatching games ever. So a lot of people were just thrown in and played, you know. Oh, it's a shoot-em-up game. I'm going to go shoot people. So when you look at a lot of games from 1994, 1995, a lot of good players. You had Thresh, you had Chunk, you had No Skill, you had Zolaras. I think Xenos was in around that time as well. There was a lot of good players there, and a lot of it was run and gun. If you watch any demos, if you can still find them, of Chunk, he was the first guy that was the BFG spammer. People today would still hate him for BFG spamming, I'm sure. And his whole game plan was BFG, rush, in your face, I'm going to BFG the crap out of you. Grab the plasma, BFG you again. If I die, do it all over again. So that's kind of the way he played. As we kind of know, in 1995, so there was the Duango Championships, and Thresh had ended up winning that tournament. And the best player considered at the time was No Skill, and he had a very kind of weird setup. But it was very primitive. And then in 1996, you kind of see from the Montreal players, Slasher, Galiu, and Burnout, that a little bit more thought process evolved. And this is why I always liked Slasher's game. When you watch him play, he was kind of the first, in my opinion, thinker of the game, and just thought, well, you know, if I just sit here and kind of play conservatively, I know which way my opponent's going to come from. Therefore, I'll have an advantage. And he kind of played that game. So a lot of players at the time would just rush into him. He'd be fully prepared and just kind of sit around, or camp, as some people say. But, you know, we call it conservative. And, you know, he won games that way. And then some people started to evolve and play the same way he did. So then it kind of became a struggle. You still saw some rushing. Like a common thing in Map 1 at the time, if you were going to rush the blue BFG room, was to fire a BFG in two different directions and run in the center to cover all bases. And that play was very prevalent in 96 and 97. And then as players got better, they found out, oh, well, we just kind of stand in the middle, and when they come in, we're going to shoot them, and they die. That play all of a sudden died out. And then you hit the year 2000, where you have Ocelot against Johnson, and they really refined the game where it was extremely conservative and very planned attacks, and it was very much like a chess game by that point in time between the top players. And it emulated 97 in a lot of ways, but just kind of more refined. The movement was slicker. You know, in each situation, there's kind of this is the best play now to do in this situation. It was a lot more about weapon control. Okay, well, you know, I'm going to gain all the weapons and kind of try to keep my opponent away from getting the super shotgun or keep him away from the BFG, you know, kind of controlling your opponent to certain areas of the map. And then when you refine it even more when you get into 2002 and 2003, the game became a lot slower, which is probably a bit bad for the game. Like, there's some examples, me and Ocelot and Slasher had some games that went like 50 minutes long. Completely crazy. Because, you know, it was well known, well, if I'm the one sitting here and you're rushing in at me, I'm the one with the advantage, so why would I move? So that kind of became a little bad for the game. But the good thing that happened at that point in time is some of the ports were kind of up and coming at the time. So you had CS Doom, you had Z-Damon, you had Skull Tag. And, you know, back in the day, it was always Map 1. Map 1 was the tournament map. Your secondary tournament map was Duango 5. And then every once in a while, you know, you'd play Judas or D5 and 7 or something for fun. But at this point in time now, D5M1, Duango 5 Map 1 started to become the more prevalent map online. So it kind of expanded, and eventually when you reach up to 2007, we kind of went the more like the Quake games and other first-person shooting games. We actually had a map pool. And in older terms, it was Map 1, Duango 5 Map 1, Judas. And I think originally, you know, there's some maps that were kind of competing for the 4th and 5 slot, like Duango 5 Map 7, SSL2, King 1. So there was a lot broader of a set of maps now that were played. So it wasn't always whoever the best Map 1 player was the best player. It's kind of whoever's the best player in all these maps is the best player. So it kind of evolved more that way.
That's the recent evolution, that prior to that it was just solving Map 1 to the most extreme manner. And now it's just more maps are important, right?
It is. The one thing that's kind of interesting is I don't feel any other map has really emulated one of the important things of why Map 1 was originally good. The plasma gun had a good use. The rocket launcher had a good use. And every weapon had a use in that map. And whereas Duango 5 Map 1 is predominantly super shotgun with some BFG, maybe a rocket or two thrown in the hallways. And there's some limited uses for chain gun. But it felt like Map 1 really had a balance of how all the weapons could work. And that's why it kind of led to a more conservative game. It was a tight area. Rocket launchers could stop BFG rushes. That's kind of...
And how it went. You mentioned chess, which comes up a lot with Map 1. And even your Map 1 guide is actually structured like a chess game, with you describing opening games and, you know, the middle game and the ending. Mm-hmm. So, chess and you?
Yes, I enjoy chess, and I do see a lot of comparisons between first-person shooting duels and chess. Back in the day, with Doom 2.exe, you actually had an opening, because you either chose whether you were the green player or the indigo player, and green always started in the same spot, and indigo always started in the same spot. So in Map 1, the green player had the BFG rocket launcher, and shotgun, the super shotgun start. And the indigo player was kind of in the hallways. All I had use of was a chain gun. And there was a few interesting plays that came out of that, actually. One was you could either back up and get the BFG. You could run like hell and try to get the plasma gun and fire and hope you save your life. And there was one where you could kind of hide by the blue room door and hope the person doesn't look and go over. It eventually got refined that the best place was to just run for the plasma, get it, and do that. In the newer versions, obviously, with Otomax and Z-Dame and all that, there's no start spawn. So you just spawn randomly in the map, which is probably good. I mean, there's a lot more. It adds a lot more complexity to the opening. You don't have to just memorize what to do if you're green. You got to know all the different scenarios. Well, if I spawn here and they spawn here, and there's that many different combinations that you always have to think about.
So, definitely the advanced source ports have been a blessing for Doom Deathmatch. You would say.
Yeah, you know, there's pros and cons of the way the ports do it versus the original, for sure. I'm a fan of the pure old school stuff, like all the options and how the settings are. But I mean, obviously, I play the new school stuff as well with the ports, and you know, I play both. It doesn't bother me that much. So
Old school Doom 2.exe deathmatch was item respawn on, right?
No, it still had the same where your items, you could run it that way, but most people ran with your weapon stayed still, and when you ran over it, you had that weapon. Well, the biggest thing from the old school to how people mostly play the ports nowadays is in Doom 2.exe, when you ran over a weapon you didn't have, you had to switch to it. It automatically switched to it. You had no choice. So when they made a lot of the older maps, they were based around that, where, okay, kind of a weapon could be in your way. If it was a crappy weapon, you either had to make sure you at some point got it so that if you accidentally ran over it later, it wouldn't switch, or you had to have good enough movement to always know to go around it. Whereas nowadays, you kind of have the option to say, no, I don't want to switch to the weapon. So it changes the gameplay of some maps a little bit.
Okay, and... So, but beyond that, what's like the major difference? Any other things?
That, the sound range is a bit different between Doom 2.exe and the new stuff. You can hear a bit further in the newer versions. Silent spawns, which played a role in a few maps and where you could spawn camp. So, in the original, there was kind of a glitch where if a spawn was, I think it's west facing?
Yes.
It would be silent, so you couldn't hear it. So you always had to keep an eye on those spawns, because you wouldn't be able to hear it. Whereas in the new ones, you can just hear it. So, you know, there's little differences like that. But overall, Odamex and Doom 2.exe play very similar. And I would throw Z-Daemon in there as well. They play very similar to the original.
But not crappy Zandro.
I am not going to comment, because as many people have pointed out, I have not tried Zandronim in about a year. So I cannot comment on that.
Okay, speaking of, the new school stuff, you also participated in a lot of IDL seasons. So you've actually been a successful CTF player. How does that mesh with your 101 experience?
That means a lot to me that you called me a successful CTF player. I don't think I've ever heard that from you, Do. You know, I'm not a huge fan of team games. I never have been. I always really like the one-on-one aspect of something. It's me and myself against you and yourself, and that's what it is. That being said, I've definitely enjoyed playing CTF and playing with the IDL and a lot of the good CTF players. I don't think I'm as good at CTF as I am at Duel. I think I can hold my own, and I think you could probably stick me in any position. If at nothing more, just say, Dev, just grab a shotgun and shoot things that move. I can do that. But I've tried some different things. I've obviously ran one season. I think with Human Bones I was running. I've played defense a lot. A lot of people automatically assume the throwman defense because my aim was good. They kind of overlook the fact that I can actually move as well. And I've played some seasons in mid. So I've played a lot of different positions, and I've played with a lot of different players. I played with Ty. I've played with Genova. I've played with Human Bones. And I enjoy the way IDL is set up. I think the draft is a good way to equalize the teams. I think the way the schedule runs, the way you play everybody, I just think it's a really good setup. I don't know what's been completely going on with it lately. It seems like it was kind of dying a little bit in the summer, and then everyone said, no, we can't let it die, and they all came back at once, and it seems to be going strong again. So that's good to see. I actually played CTF when it very first came out on Z-Daemon, and actually did a lot of the original theory in it with Ocelot and Badco, actually. We all aliased, as I'm sure everyone knows this by now, as the Alus. So I was CTF Dalu, and Ocelot was Malu, and Badco was Balu. And we used to just go on and play 3-on-3 CTF, and I developed a slightly complex communication system to use over TeamSpeak while we played, and I think it was about a year or something before we actually lost the game, and it was to DUI at the time.
So you started with a very early CDF, and then you came back to it when IDL started being a thing?
Yes. I played mostly pub CTF and some of the, you know, the clan games and CTF and stuff for a while. I forget why I never played IDL when it first came out. Either I just wasn't as interested in CTF at the time, because I had taken some breaks over my my playing career where I just not played for a few years, then came back. And it's probably IDL was one of those things where I couldn't commit the time to play. And that's one of the things where if I can't commit the time to playing, I don't like signing up and disappointing people if I can't end up playing. So I try to really make sure that I am actually able to play and have enough time to play before I actually sign up. So I think that probably played a role why it was a few IDL seasons before I actually signed up.
Okay, now you'd mentioned how you mainly get stuck on defense because your aim, or you're running around and shooting people as a in CTF. But beyond that, like, do you feel that you could really come down and like create a guide on CTF, like the way you could with Deathmatch?
Probably not. I could easily describe the way I play specific maps against specific teams or specific players. But there are a lot of variables, and I think there's a lot of acceptable plays, and there's a lot more team synergy that you have to deal with. I mean, I could definitely write a guide that says, okay, in this exact situation, this guy should be here, this guy should be here, and this guy should be here. They should be all doing this. In a CTF game, that never happens. One of them has ended up dying. Some other guy has flown in from some side entrance for some reason and head you off. It's just, there's just so many variables. I could definitely describe the very generic way I play, which is different than how other people play. For example, I take a different approach on running the flag than other players. There's a lot of people that every time they're running, every flag run, they're trying to score every flag run. So, you know, they're kind of, you know, they'll wait 10 seconds here, they'll kind of deke the guy out, and they'll get an X number, we'll call it X number of runs a game. Me, I try to get there as fast as I can and out as fast as I can. The idea is by going straight there and straight back, I'm getting the maximum number of runs in every game. And at some point in time, even though I'm playing predictably, because I'm going roughly the same way, I'll vary it a little bit, at one point in time, somebody's going to miss a shot, and then I'm going to be gone halfway down the map. So I don't look the score on every one. I try to get the max number of runs in a game I can, and then wait for the opportunities to present themselves. So where some people will get about 50 runs in a game.
I just want to jump in. This is called zombie running. It's actually a officially recognized way to play offense.
Oh, is it recognized now? Everyone used to just be like, look at him. He's an idiot running. But, I would zombie run, I guess, to try to get the max number in. I don't play all maps that way. I play a lot of them that way. But, and here's the other thing, too. It's kind of psychological. Because I'm playing the same way, we'll say I make 30 runs the same way. I grab the flag, I run it the exact same way every time. I always go this specific way. And I actually had this, I don't think it was map 4. It was one of the weirder maps. I don't remember the number. Maybe it was 22 or something like that. And I think this was when I was playing with Ty, and I was playing against the team. And I ran that way the whole game. And then the last minute of the game, it was still tied at 0-0. I ran in. I went the same way. Of course, he was behind me as usual. And I just stopped and dodged to the left. The guy was completely thrown off, missed a shot, and then I ran and then scored. So it's kind of like I spent like 8 minutes setting this up and then just messed with his head in the last minute. And he was like, what? He didn't do this before the entire game. Why'd he do it now? And it's one of those things you kind of lull people into, okay, he's going to do this exact same thing every time. The other thing is, you know, for someone on defense to have to see devastation like every 10 seconds of the game, that's got to be daunting.
So you're trying to get in their heads, applying your chess strategies even in CTF?
A bit, yeah, I'd say. I don't know if I'd call it chess strategy, but but yeah, definitely some psychological play there. Okay, well, and it kind of does the same thing in duel too, depending if you're playing against a really good player or a mediocre player, right? You know, if you're playing against a really good thinking player, so actually I'm going to restart this. So if you're playing against a slightly non-thinking player, mediocre player, and you do something twice in a row, they're going to assume you're going to do it the third time in a row. Whereas you as a thinking player be like, well, I did it twice in a row. He's going to anticipate it the third night. You do the third time something different, and it throws them off usually. Now, against a thinking player, you would be like, they were like, so say I'm playing Jakus and I do something twice in a row. Jakus is probably going to think, okay, I'm playing a dev, another thinking player. We both know that he's done something twice in a row. He might be assuming that I'm going to guess the third thing and continue it. So, you know, that's where a little bit of psychology and chess come into it. So against a thinking player, I may or may not necessarily switch it up because they're going to anticipate the switch. So same thing can apply to CTF.
Do you think these head games can go too far? Because you mentioned Jakus, and both of us remember a certain Wango 6 map 1 game where Jakus probably went too far with these head games and purposefully got himself locked in a spawn alcove where you couldn't reach him.
I don't know if you could call that a head game, to be honest. He was trying to make a point that the game or the map was broken. I don't consider that a psychological head game at all, like when you're trying to anticipate plays. I mean, sure, I could have technically anticipated he was going to lock himself in a room until I get annoyed enough, but I don't think that's a psychological play, so I think that's definitely different.
Okay, moving on, since we talked about your IDL contributions, we talked about your deathmatch history. Going forward in deathmatch, how do you see the longevity of deathmatch, you know, going on?
Deathmatch in general or deathmatch in Doom?
Deathmatch in Doom. Obviously, deathmatch in general is going to continue on.
Okay, yeah. I was going to say, that's an easy question. It's always going to be around. Deathmatch in Doom. Well, you know, Ralphus has started something amazing. It's called the North American Doom Association, NADA. And he intends to run he's running like a tournament every 2 weeks, and then there's an invite, and it's got like almost like the golf scoring system where it takes your most recent 10 tournaments. And I think the most recent 4 major tournaments. Great idea, great in theory, and I was really excited to play in it. It seems like the activity has gone down again, like just a little bit where, you know, there's still 8 to 20 people coming out and playing in some of the dual tournaments, but it seems to be tailing off a little bit. I don't know if it's just because it's people are back in school or something or other, but maybe there's too many, maybe a tournament every 2 weeks is a little bit too much to ask from a community that's kind of stretched a little bit thin, but I definitely foresee there'll be a lot of serious deathmatch play, like with the current players, for definitely a little while going into the future. I think the biggest challenge is going to be getting new blood into the dual scene. A lot of people that pick up Doom, because there's such a high bar of entry to become competitive in dual deathmatch, a lot of them just say, "Wow, I'm not going to bother putting my time into that. I'm just going to play in some public free for all the CTF servers." So it's kind of hard to get people into it. I like the way we ran the ZDDL, where we had skill divisions. So even people who were of lower skill, you know, they still had a shot to win, and they were playing against similar players of their own skill. So I think that might be a way to go, is to have some, you know, some tournaments that are geared more towards new players. The game is 20 years old now. It's hard to get new blood into a game that old. It doesn't have the graphics to compete with the newer games. And a lot of today's generation, you know, judge a game based on its graphics. That's the way that's the way the world is going. So I think long in the future, it's going to be, you know, a few of the fans were still going to be playing, but I think it's eventually going to tail off into inactivity.
On the deathmatch scene?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, probably the game as a whole, to be honest, but yeah, definitely the deathmatch scene. I think it's got such a high bar of entry right now where someone's got to really put in a decent amount of time. And some people will, for sure. For every 500 people that look at Doom, there might be one that says, you know what, I want to do that, and will put the time into play. But I think the other 499 are more common.
Now, see, that's kind of interesting, because when we talk about Doom as a whole dying, that's something that I don't foresee ever really happening in the same way that, like, Casablanca is never going to be forgotten, or, you know, Gone with the Wind, or anything of that era. That people will always come back to it because, I mean, even now, if you look at, like, the single-player side of Doom, just there's been such a resurgence of people coming into Doom, and it seems to happen, like, every year somebody will be like, well, this is going to be the last great X of Doom. And it's funny that you mentioned, like, the amount of effort that's required in Deathmatch, because I think the biggest reason why single-player probably will never die and keeps having new people constantly come in is how easy it is to just, you know, make a Doom map or, you know, come in and play, you know, user-made level A versus Deathmatch where, you know, if you want to get really into dueling, you have to, you know, really practice and devote time. And so I think that your division skill idea is kind of something that might save Doom in that way, because, I mean, Deathmatch still happens. There's, you know, I can log on to whatever and see 50 servers and with people playing it, but, like, dueling is kind of a lost art almost now, where
it's definitely getting down to that level now, and remember, when I did start playing in 2001, there was an extremely small community because the ZDMN community hadn't popped up yet. So, you know, we're down to 10 to 15 active players. And, you know, it did come back. I would say it was probably less active in 2001 than it is active now. But
so you think it just needs the proper kick to get restarted? Maybe Doom 4 coming out, something like that?
I don't know, maybe. I agree that Doom as an art is probably never going to die. Everyone's going to eventually come back to it. But I think it's the death matching thing. I don't know if Doom 4 is really going to kick up the duel scene in Doom. But like I said, remember how I'd mentioned there was a lot of Quake people I'd run into that thought Doom was cool and interested? There's a few of them that have come and played Doom because of it and said, yeah, okay, it's cool. Did they stick around? Well, you know, they played for a few months. And I think it's going to be like everything where it's going to come and go. It's probably going to come and go in waves. Like,
do you actually think Quake will be in the same position sooner or later? Because it's also a dual game with a seriously high skill cap, and getting into the game is actually pretty hard.
I think Quake Live has been in that specific situation for a little bit now. One, you can tell definitely from QuakeCon and some of the major tournaments, one, the prize pool has gone way down. It was 2008. Was the last, like, really good prize pool, and it's gone down since then. And the other thing is exactly as what you said. I log on. I do play Quake Live. I've started to play a little bit competitively. You know, I joined some of the online ladders and clubs and stuff. But it's just so hard to find someone to practice with around your own skill level. And it's either there's people, you know, there's the pros that are way higher than you, and then there's the people that are way below you. You're going to crush them, and they're never going to play again. So I think it's the same kind of thing where there needs to be some way of getting more people into the game. So right now it's just kind of the small little group of players that will play. The one advantage I think Doom does have over Quake in this is in Quake you can be a little bit better than somebody and you can still probably pound them 15-0. Like, it's very quadratic in the way the scores go. Whereas Doom is very linear. Normally if you're twice as good as somebody, you beat them 50-25. Like, that's roughly how Doom goes. And this is really good for the game because even someone can play against me, lose 50-20, but then say, you know, my goal is going to be to get 25 on dev consistently. And they work towards that goal. That's how I improved myself. Against Dominus and Slasher Nozalot, I was always around 50-20. Well, I worked and said, you know what? I'm going to consistently get 25. And that's what I did. And then when I got there, I said, I'm now going to consistently get 30. And you play for those goals. I don't necessarily see those same types of goals in Quake Live. For example, so when I was new, I used to play with an extremely skilled player, and I would lose, we'll say, 10-0. Even though I've gotten twice as better, I still lost 10-0. I got better again, but I still lost 10-0. It was every situation, it was that much closer. So, okay, so now at the very beginning, okay, fight for the mega health. I'd do 20 damage to him, I'd die. Then, like, when I got twice good, okay, I'd do about 100 worth of damage, but he'd still get the mega health, and then I still just die, and it was still over. So you're getting closer. So it takes a really strong mindset to look at, you know, to objectively look at your game and say, okay, even though I'm still losing by the same amount, I've actually improved. I'm dealing more damage. I'm playing this smarter. Whereas in Doom, I guess it doesn't have that psychological barrier to players where you can quickly see, okay, I fragged better, I played better. So I think that's probably one of the advantages Doom has over Quake in terms of new players. Because new players, they're going to get crushed 20-0. They're going to say, okay, screw this, and go play free-for-all, realistically.
Now, something I'd like to bring up is streaming in Doom, and whether or not you or anybody in the deathmatch scene has ever considered trying to get streaming really going for the matches. I know there's IDL Radio, but one of the things, like King Dime, who actually holds like the current record for fastest Heart of the Swarm run in StarCraft II, and is a now prevalent Doom speedrunner, and has been working on getting Plutonia into awesome games done quick, and I believe he actually got that done, and he is going to be going there later on this year or next year when it's actually held, and he streams all of his attempts, and he actually has quite a large viewer base, and he's actually been pretty responsible for getting people kind of back into Doom on a single player level. There's been quite a few people who pop in like, oh, what's this? Oh, this is really cool, you know, and then they start playing it again. So I think that's definitely an area that I think would help get people casually back into Deathmatch. Now, as you said, transitioning from casually into Deathmatch to actually being able to play duels on a level such as yourself, and, you know, many of the other high-skilled players, that's a whole different story. But, like, Zandronim right now actually does have kind of, like, a newbie duel scene going on that's pretty fairly active. And, you know, like, I even play, and I suck at dueling. But, you know, that's, you know, I think a place where like, more coaching, kind of like you, how you said you'd like to, you know, pass along your skill. I think that there definitely is the opportunity there that if effort could be put into it to maybe draw some new blood in. And, you know, sure, there's going to be, you know, 500 people and only one of them is going to be the person who actually can compete at that level. But I do think that it's kind of been ignored almost, mainly because, you know, the higher echelon of the deathmatch and CTF and all that kind of look down on Zandronim as the kiddie retard source port.
I actually want to say there might be a thing why this doesn't happen that much in Doom is that there are years of like top tier players who have a serious egos and serious like a history
egos.
Of achieving
my ego.
achieving like a great accolade, and then they just don't want to you know, actually lose to some random person, or maybe someone who just aliases as someone you know, some newbie, and then he just trashes them, this famous guy, and they just decide not to play. And they just keep their, you know, perfect record by not playing.
You want to talk about aliasing? I got a really quick funny story for you. So I remember this time because my aliases used to be found out really fast. I mean, I'd be aliasing, I'd play like two games, and people were already like, that's Dev. Okay. And so I remember this one time, so to get people to stop talking about, hey, who's this random good guy? I put on in ZDM a pink Doom uniform and used the name Lollipop, because nobody goes in to ZD players and says, some pink guy named Lollipop beat me 50-20. Doesn't happen. Never would happen. See? That's funny. I thought it was
That's great.
So to go back to the streaming thing, and I think Doo's got some good points there that, yeah, some people do have the egos. And, you know, I think it's in the better form of the game that to get some streaming maybe going. That's interesting to stream while you're playing. I did that once. I didn't stream. I recorded it while I was playing and then uploaded it to YouTube. It was a game against Zanero. And because I was trying to test out some screen capture software. And I've actually got some people that subscribed to me on YouTube from some of these demos that I've put up. And so that kind of brought forth the idea of, well, maybe I'll analyze some old air demos. Maybe I'll analyze some demos. Maybe I'll explain some things. But doing it while you're playing and streaming, that's a really good idea that I've not thought of. So that would be kind of cool to just go to one, like you said, just go play some games and just be like, yeah, this is what I'm doing, and just play. Two, or to go and watch other people and kind of explain and take your take. So we did a lot of work with Jahar from Tasty Spleen TV. He had casted our ZDDL games, and I think he might have casted some IDL games. But he's been like the main caster for Doom, and he was the one that also casted QuakeCon, by the way. Great caster. He knows good stuff about Doom. And he's very enjoyable. And I've gone on with him because we did a King of the Hill once to kind of generate some interest for ZDDL where, you know, we'd kind of go on the cast and I'd explain, well, yeah, you know, this is what they're doing for the people that didn't exactly know. And then say, well, this is what I don't like about what he's doing and this is how I would play it instead. And I guess if some people ever went back and reviewed that, they could be like, oh, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think that's an interesting idea maybe to generate some interest is to get some sort of live streaming while you're playing or commentary. That's a good idea. I like it.
Okay, normally we ask at this point something called the Desert Island Megawad question, which is if you were trapped on a desert island, which Doom maps would you bring to only play? But as you're not a very avid single-player Doom player, we're going to change this to if you had to play Doom on a desert island, you had nothing else to play, it's Doom, and we're going to say Jakist, or whoever is the guy on the island with you. You're fighting Jakist, and you can only have 5 maps to play on for the rest of the time you're trapped on this island to duel. What 5 maps would you pick as your deathmatch maps?
Do you want me to kill him on the island, or yeah. Do we have to live cohabitively?
Just whatever you... What maps would you pick?
You know, I'm going to throw out some really funny ones here that people will not expect from me.
Perfect.
I would like to play Gothic DM map 11, because I've really liked playing that map, and I used to always land that map. Most people didn't like it, so Gothic DM map 11 is kind of in there. I like that map.
Okay.
I'd probably pick Judas, just so he could teach me to be better at it. Dwangify that map 1, we have to, because that's the standard. I obviously really like SSL2, so I'll just throw that in there as a 4th. There is this weird map. It was in Carnage. I think it was Carnage.wad map 3, maybe. That was just kind of like an SSG aim map. That was kind of exciting. It had some cool sound effects.
Cool.
I would probably... don't joke. If a map had good MIDI music, I'm like, yeah, I like this map. Like, you know, if it was decent, it had good MIDI music. That's why I like Gothic DM map 11. You know, it's really good, but it just has really good music. And same thing with Carnage. Carnage is like, yeah, it's got good sound effects, it's got good music.
Perfect.
Yeah, so I played it a bunch. There's another map. It was Legends.wad map 24. Had the weirdest music. It was the crappiest map, but it has awesome music, so I had to play it with somebody.
Yeah, like, you just like, oh god, this map sucks, but at least I'm listening to this mini track.
It was. So picture this. So one, it was hilarious, especially playing it with one of my best friends. So it's got this big, steep pillar in the middle, and there's like layers. There's the bottom layer that you can kind of walk up on the steep, huge pillar. There's a middle layer and an upper layer. So you can't shoot down or shoot up, and they start basically with a super shotgun. So basically, you could just sit on the middle layer, and they'd spawn. They have nothing to do except go up this pillar in the middle, and you just pop them off in the air. So I think I beat my buddy like 50-5 or something. It's like, bang, bang. It's just like shooting people into the air. It was really fun. Really, really hilarious. My friend never played with me again, but it was fun. And it had good music.
And one last question, if I may. The best DM player of all times, Ocelot or Chewy? Don't say Genova, please.
No, he's the best CTF player of all time, right? I'm probably not the authority to say this, and people will probably hate me for this, but I honestly think Ocelot. I mean, I think it would be close. Like, no detriment to Chewie. I think it would be close. I really do. But, you know, I was at one point a rival of Ocelot, and I just know how serious he takes it. And the amount of training he would put in, if you announced that him and Chewie were for sure going to be in a city location next year to play a match of 50 games, he would probably spend 9 hours a day for that entire year playing. I don't think Chewie would probably do the same. And I think he would have every play Chewie does, like, planned out methodically. I honestly think the way Ocelot approaches the game is just much more serious, and I think he would give him the edge in the game. I really do.
Now you're traitor of your continent.
Well, you know, you didn't say it was between me and Chewie, or me and Ocelot. Chewie and Ocelot. You know. But, no, you know what? I've played the methodicalness of that, and it's extremely strong. He's got this really strong aura that he approaches the game with, and he just, you know, he's there to crush people. Like, and it's, he is. And, you know, he takes it very seriously, and he's an extremely good player because of it. You know, he takes it much more seriously than I do. And I think it's done very well for him. I honestly think Ocelot would be the favorite. I can't say he'd win, but I think he would be the favorite.
All right. Well, let me, as our last word, let me congratulate you on getting married.
Oh, thanks. I'm not dead yet. Just kept me alive.
So do you think actually that QuakeCon was your last big bang and you went home to be a family man?
Ah, well, you know, I'm still doing a ton of games. I'm getting into more games than ever, if anything. I mean, I've started playing Magic the Gathering again. I'm obviously still compete in chess. So I wouldn't say completely, you know. We play games together as well, that kind of stuff. But she used to play some Doom with me a little bit. And you know, I tried to get her to strafe around some imp fireballs, and just wasn't going that well. But you know, could run around aimlessly and still manage to dodge them. So we kind of still said that was a success. But I don't know. It probably is going to be my last big bang. I don't think I'm ever going to have an opportunity to be on a stage in front of 2,000 people cheering again, and still having my clothes on and not be drunk. So I don't. Yeah, that probably is the biggest bang that I'm ever going to get from the gaming community. You never know, but. You know, the age definitely plays a factor, and the time definitely plays a factor of ever getting to that point again. Unless they name, you know, Doom at QuakeCon again next year or the year after, then maybe there's a small hope. That probably is the biggest bang. I still like to continue playing a little bit, maybe not as much as I have, because I am getting a little bit tight on time. But obviously, I'm still semi-active in NADA and playing quite a bit. So I wouldn't say it was the guaranteed last big bang, but there's a decent probability that it was, yeah.
All right. Well, we should probably wrap this up.
Sounds good. Hopefully I didn't ramble on too much. Hopefully it was
Thank you for joining us. This has been Devastation here at Tango TV. An insightful look into deathmatch and dueling, the often not really discussed in the single-player community enough aspect of Doom. If you have any questions about who's coming up, we have later on Lupinix Castman coming up, we have Travers D, and a few other special guests like Super Jamie in the months to come. Thank you, and goodbye.